Okay, so you have notes in front of you, and we're focusing today, as you know, on parenting the younger years. The idea is to focus on that specific age category of every child under school-going age. That being said, we're going to broadly break that up into three smaller categories, so infants, toddlers, and preschoolers. And roughly, we're looking at infants as being the first year, toddlers being years 2 and 3, and then years 4 and 5 are kind of those transition into preschooling ages. And I hope that will be clear as we go. We're going to lay some basic foundation work. Some of you may be familiar with the initial stuff that we put down, but it's essential. Hopefully, if you haven't heard it, you will be encouraged and instructed by it for the first time. If you have heard it before, it's one of those things that we always need to be reminded of. I'm always baffled, to be honest with you, whenever we offer parenting courses and parents choose not to come and they're like, it's fine. Like, I did it 5 years ago with our first kid. Okay, I don't know about you, I need to be reminded about these things all the time. In fact, that's why I love to teach on marriage and parenting, not because I'm a rock star husband or rock star father, but because every time I prepare and teach, I'm like, oh, right, I should be doing that. And so it's so helpful for me to be reminded. Now, I know how much I need to be reminded of things I already know. And so it baffles me whenever parents are like, I got this. It's fine. And you know what, to, again, just be transparent, it's usually the parents that don't got this that are like, okay. So I'm encouraged that you guys are here. That being said, as much as what we are pursuing the wisdom that is in God's Word today, and to stay at the forefront of everything, all that you need for life and godliness, including parenting in every age, every season, is in God's Word. It is all sufficient. We do not need worldly ideas. We do not need psychologized theories. We need the wisdom of God's Word. And most of our troubles as parents come from when we don't follow that wisdom and follow the world's wisdom. So we're going to pursue the wisdom of the Word, but at the same time, I want to be clear so this doesn't come across as false advertising. There is no secret key that I'm going to offer you today to parenting success. If that is your hope, you're going to leave here disappointed. It's not like I or perhaps Jessica or maybe Jean is going to give you the secret key, the instructions that you haven't heard, the code that you haven't discovered yet, and it's just going to make everything perfect and easy. And you're like, ah, you know, the angels have sung, heaven has shone down its light, and parenting is just a walk in the park. It's not. Parenting is always going to be hard because you are working as two sinners on another sinner, and that's just always challenging. But there is a way to do it wisely and do it well. Let's begin then with the dirty dozen of unbiblical parenting strategies. Like I said to you, one of the reasons why we struggle, maybe even the biggest reason why we struggle, is because we don't follow God's wisdom, we follow the world's pseudo-wisdom. It's not a true wisdom, it's a false wisdom. James, in his epistle, talks all about that, the false wisdom of the world, and yet, it is incredibly popular. Popular especially because it's what we're used to. You need to remember that most of us come into parenting with these presuppositions, ideas that we're bringing in based on primarily what you experienced and what you remember as a child growing up. Our default setting is not wisdom. Our default setting is experience. And sometimes that experience represents wisdom. And if you were, in God's grace, fortunate enough to grow up in a home that was not only Christian, but wise in how they conducted themselves, then you are at an advantage already. But many of us, even when we grew up with loving parents in a good home, my parents are wonderful people, but I don't think they followed the wisdom of God's Word as diligently as what they should have. And so my default setting is not a wise setting. It's just an experience of what I had growing up. And I need to recalibrate then my thinking of how to do parenting. So many of us come in with these dirty dozen already pre-programmed. This is where you begin. So don't be surprised if you need to rip up some plans and start again. The first is permissiveness. In other words, never telling your children no, stop, or don't do that. We'll talk about that later on when we discuss gentle parenting. But boy, I have seen some epic meltdowns. We are raising a generation of social misfits at best, psychopaths at worst. And I mean that. Like, the way you guys are laughing tells me I don't have to convince you of this. You've seen it all over. It is the present trend in parenting circles. And so we are permissive, and we are excusing this permissiveness with ideas like, it's a stage, the child will grow out of it. I know my three-year-old just punched my six-month-old in the face, but it's a phase, all right? They're so cute, even though they're behaving sinfully. And listen, let's admit, there are some things that children do that are incredibly depraved and yet at the same time hysterical. There are occasions that Jessica and I have to like bite our tongues. We don't laugh in front of the kid, encourage them in their sin. We know we need to discipline that, but it was also funny. I'm also talking about the more severe examples. It's not cute. And there is actually nothing that is funny about disobedience. He's just expressing his will or his personality. She's too young to obey. Or they are fill in the blank. Any number of psychological syndromes or disorders, ADHD or ADD, that's the worst. Authority defiance disorder? That just sounds like sin with a different acronym. Like what? And then assumed or transferred success. So in other words, man, because I am killing it at work, like I'm just climbing the ladder, I'm getting a promotion every 6 months, obviously, I'm going to be really good at parenting, and I don't know about you, but that just doesn't work for me. Okay, the second excuse that we come up, of the dirty dozen is the antagonist. Every conversation or instruction becomes a battle. By the time the children reach their teenage years, the battle often goes nuclear. And in fact, I'd say because of gentle parenting, you don't even have to wait until they become teens, right? I mean, I don't know about you. I've been in some pretty awkward situations, whether it's out at the shops or in another social setting. Well, you've got like a three-year-old, a four-year-old cussing and cursing their mother. And the response from the mother is just to cuss and curse right back. And so you know exactly where the kid learned to do that. But becoming your child's antagonist is not helpful. You may get away with it now when they're little, but by the time they're teens, they're going to be as big as you, especially if you've got boys, maybe even bigger. Then what? Okay. Third, the positivist, the Oprah approach. Everything is directed towards the child's self-esteem, right? The Dr. Phil, or in our case, the James Dobson. The Bible teaches that children are to esteem God, not self, by obeying his commands. And the Bible teaches that children are to esteem their parents by honoring them. In short, the self-honoring of psychology puts the wrong person at the center of the child's life. In the positivist approach, a child is entertained or coddled out of his bad behavior and attitudes rather than disciplined out of them. Right? So if you can't encourage them through their self-esteem, Johnny, I know you are better than this. I know that you can excel. Come on, let's do it together. If you can't cheerlead your kid into perfect obedience, then you need to recognize that perhaps your method is flawed. The fourth of the dirty dozen is the behaviorist approach. You're looking at external behavior as the entire standard of whether you've done a good job. External conformity is good enough. If the outside of the cup is washed, if the child is externally presentable, they've got clean clothes, if they're respectful, if they're obedient, that's good enough. It's Pharisee parenting, right? We don't want to raise Pharisees. And I think we would all acknowledge this is perhaps the biggest pitfall for us when we pursue biblical wisdom, because it comes so close to what we do want to achieve. We do want to train in acts of righteousness even before there is regeneration and true heart change. We do want them to learn to be obedient and respectful. We do want them to dress well, to have good manners and clean clothes. There's nothing wrong with that, but it's just not enough. We need to go further than that. The fifth is the distracted approach. That's a total lack of strategy due to our busyness. Here, MacArthur says, parents must involve themselves in their children's lives enough to ensure that no other influence takes precedence. And this one, even though there's one sentence there, I want to press in hard on you, because sometimes we feel like we are doing all that God has given us to do because our kids are fed, they're clothed, they're schooled, they're well-behaved, but their primary influence is actually not coming from us. Maybe it's coming from a nanny that spends 8 hours of the day with your kid instead of you. Maybe it's coming from a school teacher. You need to consider who the primary influence is in your children's lives. And that's going to become even more important when you get to the schooling age. But even now, in the formative first 5 years of your child's life, who is the primary influence? No one said you can never use help, but God's mandate to you as a father and a mother is to influence your child more than anyone else. So, distracted parenting often keeps us away from that. The sixth one is delegation. It's the church's job. It's the school's job. It's the daycare's job. It's their responsibility to raise them. And here again, we have MacArthur dropping a bomb on us, saying God himself has given the responsibility for raising children, to parents, not school teachers, peers, child care workers, or other people outside of the family. Therefore, it is wrong for parents to attempt to unload that responsibility or shift the blame when things go wrong. You cannot subcontract your work out to others. It doesn't matter who it is, not the Sunday school teachers, not the nursery workers, not even the siblings. I would love to have had a big family, like one of those Mormon-style 10 kids in those adorably cute photos where it's dad, mom, and just you see the angle going down. Would love to do that. But often when you have those large families, it's the older siblings who end up parenting the younger siblings. And there's nothing godly about that. So godliness in the home is not achieved simply by multiplying many times. We must raise the children that we bear in a godly way. All right, the next one is pharmaceutical. We're going to drug them into manageability. Drugging children into a robotic semi-coma with Ritalin or some other drug doesn't change their heart. But parenting with a pill takes a lot less time and effort than loving discipline and instruction. If any of you have had kids in public school, one of the things that I think is becoming a real problem is that teachers are radically overstepping the bounds of their task and pushing parents to get their kids onto all sorts of medication, especially Ritalin, right? Because it makes it easier for them. The kids are docile when they're in class, especially the young boys. The reality is God has wired boys to be energetic, to be playful. There's nothing wrong with them having that energy. And the Ritalin that we force on our kids not only drugs them into a stupor, into a semi-coma, but it scars them with irreparable damage to their brains. And so we're going to irreparably harm our children when we take the pharmaceutical approach. Many parents therefore confuse the descriptions of behavior provided by such labels with diagnosis. They're thinking that the child is a diagnosis or has an irreversible condition, instead of merely receiving it as a description of their behavior. Like ADHD, It's not a diagnosis. It's a description. Your child is energetic and perhaps needs to learn to be more obedient. ADD, your child is just sinful. All right. They're left imagining that their child, to whom the God-given commands to obey and honor, they're left imagining that their child does not have to submit to those commands. Just because your kid has an acronym attached to them does not mean that they have some kind of exemption from obedience. Even when we have the bigger, scarier things like autism or Asperger's floated around. We can talk about those if you've got questions, but the reality is they still need to obey. They still need to honor. And even if there is some kind of physiological component to maybe autism, that doesn't exempt them from God's commands. All right, number 8, quality time. You bribe your kids with a few things amidst general neglect. Kids don't want quality time, they want all of your time. It doesn't matter if dad doesn't see the kids during the week and on the weekend is so busy relaxing from his stressful job that the only time he ever sees them is once every 6 months while he takes them on an amazing vacation. I don't care if you fly your kids business class to Disney World every 6 months. That is awesome, by the way. But it is no substitute for the 6 months in between every splash of a great adventure that you get to take. Number 9, activity-driven parenting. The parents make sure the child is in, and by the way, has a leading role as well. They are in every club, every concert, and every contest available. They need the leading role in the drama. They need to be the captain of the sports team and every sports team. You know, it's activity-driven parenting. And this is supposedly good for the child, but more likely it is for the glory of the parent as you show off your kid's amazing CV. You know, Junior is captain of the rugby team. He's only 13, but he plays with the under-16s. Gets those genes from me. The kids that live out their parents' unfulfilled dreams have to suffer through this kind of activity-driven parenting. Also, and especially to the moms whose full-time job is driving from one activity to the next are often trying to do this. There's nothing wrong with extracurriculars, but extracurriculars are not the primary thing you need to do with your kids. So you cannot have a full-time job Ubering your kids from one thing to the next. Then we have emergency parenting. You really only wake up and do something when the principal calls you into their office and like, okay, this is the third time we're going to suspend Susie. If you don't do something now, she's going to juvenile. Like, we all know it. Okay, she's a gangster in the making. And you go, oh, okay, yeah, we'll do something. Decibel discipline, right? This is when you yell your kids into submission. It's helpful when you can shout louder than them, but eventually they shout back at you, and then it's just a screaming match, right? Contrary to that, 1 Timothy 3, verse 4 speaks of keeping children under control with all dignity. I don't think that's particularly dignified when you're yelling at your kid. And 12, you are going to throw your hands up in despair. That is the loss of the dirty dozen. You just give up. It's too hard. It's too much. You entered into a battle of the wills with your kids, and they won. You've waved the white flag, and you have surrendered. I give up. I cannot any longer. MacArthur says, one sure way to fill your life with misery is to abdicate the responsibility God has given you as a parent and a steward of the child he has graciously placed into your hands. All right, those are the dirty dozen. This is fundamental. I'm sure you will have heard many of those things before. Let's get into some of the fundamentals of biblical parenting. Again, foundational, and we'll get into the various age categories following this, but the fundamentals are important regardless of the age category. And to be honest, if there is something like a key to parenting, it's this: understanding what your task as parents is the key to making the decisions you need to make on a daily basis of how you're going to parent your kid. Knowing what you need to do helps shape how you do it. And so if we were going to summarize parenting in one sentence, it would be teach your children to obey with a respectful attitude. That is the sum and the substance of your task as parents, even in these early years. Teach your children to obey with a respectful attitude. Ephesians 6, verse 1 says, "Children, obey your parents in the Lord, for this is right." And there are a couple of assumptions to that. The first being that God deserves to be obeyed. Paul has that as a presupposition. Second, children do not naturally do this, right? They're wired to do the opposite, in fact. Third, it's actually dangerous to disobey God. I don't know how often you think of it in those kinds of terms. You don't let your kids play with sharp knives in the kitchen drawer. You don't let your kids play in the road when they might get hit by a car. You don't let your kids have unfettered access to the medicine cabinet where they can overdose. And yet somehow you think it's fine to let them disobey and rebel against the holy God who Scripture describes as a consuming fire. That seems kind of misplaced. That's dangerous. And fourth, parents are then God's agents in the home to help children learn the dangers of disobeying Him and the blessings of obeying Him. Consequences for disobedience, blessings for obedience. In these early years, that's pretty much the wisdom that I'm hoping to instill in our kids. That fundamental way of looking at life, if I obey God, things go well. If I disobey God, things do not go well. That is, in a nutshell, everything I want to teach my preschool child. Now, Ephesians 6:1 is directed at children, obviously. It starts with children, obey your parents. But we don't often think about the implications for us as parents. Because if children are going to obey this, we are the ones who are actually going to need to help them obey this. So if this is God's mandate to kids, it's also His plan for us as parents. This is the game plan. This is the blueprint. This is the mandate by implication for us as well. And there are two basic commands to children, right? The first command is to obey. Parents make real, they make visible, they make understandable the authority of the invisible God. The reality is your kids are never going to learn to obey you, never going to learn to obey God if they do not learn to obey you. The same principle that John used in 1 John, where he says, "How can you say that you love God whom you cannot see if you do not love your brother whom you do see?" The same principle applies to parents. How do you expect your kid to obey God? He's invisible. He is intangible to your kid. They don't see Him. They don't experience Him. But they see you and they experience you. And if they cannot obey you as God's representative, they will never learn to obey Him. And that's why whenever you feel like you are acting the tyrant, like you're just being mean and making your child obey, and who are you really to be obeyed? Because your life isn't that great either. I mean, you've got your own problems. Whenever you're tempted to second guess the plan of establishing your authority over your kids, remember, it's not about you. It's not about making your kids obey you to make your life easy. It's about teaching them the most essential principle of if they don't obey you, they won't obey God. And you really, really want them to learn to obey God. So, you are God's agent to make it visible. Through their parents, children can see, touch, taste, and feel both God's justice and God's love. Right? The justice being a spank on the bum, the love being the embrace following that. through their appearance, they learn that God cannot be mocked. Disobedience brings painful consequences, and at the same time, that God is a gracious forgiver. Because discipline, when we do it right, is kind of like the gospel in a short, powerful presentation. There is justice, but there's also mercy. There are consequences that follow the disobedience, but the consequences never sever the relationship. You still love them. And so it's a wonderful presentation of the gospel to your kids. It gives them the framework even to understand the gospel as they grow and mature and are able to understand those more complicated concepts. Ted Tripp says God calls his creatures to live under authority. He is our authority and has vested authority in people within the institutions he has established, whether it's the home, the church, the state, or the business. You must not be embarrassed to be authorities for your children. You exercise authority as God's agent. You may not direct your children for your own agenda or convenience. You must direct your children on God's behalf for their good. It's helpful to remember that you are a steward of these children. You are God's agent in working in these children's hearts. And so your obedience serves God's glory and their good. Which is why, especially as they get a little bit older and can start to obey instructions, you need to think very clearly about why you are asking them to do certain things. Dads, if you get home and you're tired and you're just too lazy to get up and get yourself a drink, yelling at your kid and making him get you something from the fridge is not what God has given you authority for. Now, you may want to teach your child to think of others and to care for them. And so, you know, moms, it's not inappropriate to say, would you mind getting mom her water bottle from the room? I can't get there right now and it would really help. That's fine. Or if, like today, it's a real life example, we're getting ready to host you guys. Asking the kids, because they're old enough now, to unpack the dishwasher is not abusing our authority so that we can make life easier for ourselves. It's teaching them to be hospitable. It's teaching them to be others-minded. It's teaching them that their whole world does not revolve around what makes them feel happy and entertained. Okay? Again, Ted Tripp says, the most important lesson for a child to learn in this period, in other words, in the first 5 years of their lives, the most important lesson is that they are an individual under authority. And by the way, I didn't all caps that. Ted Tripp did, right? He really wants to press that in. The single most important lesson that your child needs to learn is that they are not a law unto themselves. They are not autonomous. Contrary to that, Invictus, they are not the master of their own fates, okay? They are individuals under authority. Now, many parents, bombarded by our culture's constant questioning of legitimate, gracious parenting authority, need to be reminded of the biblical truth that they are agents of God's gracious but just authority. And this puts a sense of strength, a sense of purpose, and a sense of responsibility back into their parenting. Now, there's a benefit to your kids. This isn't a one-sided thing. It's not like you walk away the total winner and they the total loser. Firstly, they learn to submit to authority. It's one of the keys to a peaceful childhood and to a peaceful adult life. I'm just waiting for the economic devastation that's going to happen when in 15 years' time, all of those kids that are being gentle parented right now, that have never heard no, or you may not do that, or you can't do things on your own terms, enter into the workplace. We've seen a little bit of it with the Gen Zs. It's maddening. How are they going to be productive members of society? We're training them, and this is why I said earlier, to be psychopaths. Like they've got no conscience, no sense of right or wrong, no idea of submission to an authority outside of themselves. For them, they've been trained for the first 20 years of their lives that whatever their heart wants, they may have. And they walk into the world and they are shocked to learn that life doesn't work that way. But if we've got a whole generation that's being trained to think this way, just imagine what's going to happen. Some of you are going to have to employ them. Okay. The benefit is also that they're prepared for the gospel, realizing that they are under God's rule and His need for, their need for His grace, because they are so frequently violating His authority. That doesn't mean that you're a drill sergeant, that you're a schoolmaster cracking the whip. In fact, it reminds you that you are doing this for God and therefore need to do it God's way. But nevertheless, God's way includes a very real use of authority. Not for your comfort and ease, but because the most important thing your child needs to learn is that they are under authority. But the oft-repeated words of Martin Luther are helpful. I don't know whether this is original, but it's being repeated enough times that maybe. He said, "Spare the rod and spoil the child. That is true. But beside the rod, keep an apple to give him when he has done well." Right? We should use authority. But sometimes we get uber zealous and we only use authority. It's only the rod. We do consequences for disobedience. We forget about the blessings for obedience. And life is just about escaping the consequences that you impose on your child, which again is not the right way to do things. So for you as parents, how do you train your children in the younger years? I know you've heard this before, but this is important. The big five of parenting small children. Five commands that every kid should learn. And I mean that even from infancy, as we'll get into in a moment. No, stop, come, sit, and quiet. Your kids need to learn those commands. If you're wondering what this looks like fleshed out in practice, okay, I want to train my kids that they are under authority because that's the most important lesson they need to learn in the first 5 years of life. What does that look like? It looks like this. Teaching them five commands that can be used in so many different circumstances. No, stop, come, sit, obey. No includes like the baby who learns that they can stiffen their back when you're trying to change their nappy, making it almost impossible to wipe their bum, right? That maybe the first time is childish curiosity, but in case you're naive, eventually the kid learns they can do it to defy you, and they start to do it out of sinful rebellion against you, in which case you should tell them, no, stop, even when they're 3 months old. These commands are also important for when your kid is running towards the road and you can see the truck barreling towards him. You want your kid to understand the command, stop, and to not have been trained to wait for you to convince them that they need to stop. Because kids don't need, especially in the first 5 years, explanations or reasons or parental homilies on the benefits. You don't need to give them five compelling motivations to do what mom is saying. Or six exhortations to follow dad's instructions. They just need to do it. And in the first 5 years, you know how kids start getting on the why question? The correct answer is, because I said so. That's not a cop-out. In the first 5 years, that is why. You don't need to know anything beyond that. Because I'm in authority. What's that?
So that's sinner deep.
Yes, no, absolutely. In the first... Don't. Oh, sorry, I mean, don't feel bad about it. But yes, you are the authority. They are subordinate to the authority. The reason they need to obey is because you are in authority. No further explanation needed. Why? Because I said so. Right? So they need to learn those five commands. And we'll get into that again as we work through the various age groups. But they also need to do this right? In the Lord. I need to do this in the Lord. This does not mean that our small children are believers, nor is this promoting a covenantal idea of if we baptize them or circumcise them, they come under the covenant umbrella of the family. It just means that this is the sphere in which their obedience needs to take place. Children obey within the sphere of God's authority or under the umbrella of God's authority. How children obey their parents is how they obey their God. And so the reason your child needs to learn to obey you is so that they can obey God in doing that. It's not just that if they don't obey you, they'll never obey Him in the future. It's that obeying Him in the present is obeying you. So if you want to teach your three-year-old to worship God, their worship is expressed in the form of happy-hearted obedience to you. I don't think a three-year-old or many three-year-olds are regenerate, but even if that were the case, even if the Lord smiled on your family and your five-year-old was born again, the fruit of that that we would see would be their happy-hearted obedience to you, because that is how they obey God. Those are the instructions that He has given them, and that is the appropriate way for them to bear fruit of a love for God and a faith in the Lord. And ultimately, as Paul says, this is right. Children must obey parents, not because you pay the bills and they owe you, not because you can run faster than them, or you're stronger than them, or you can yell louder than them, or you can bribe them, or you can manipulate them, or they live under your roof, they better live under your rules. Children are to obey, because this is how God has designed His world to work. And there is a beauty and an order to His creation when we do things His way. Living life God's way is the best way. And that's true even for kids. Living life God's way for them means obeying dad and mom. And when they do this, there is a beauty. There is a righteousness. And I don't mean that in the objective moral sense. I just mean you look and you go, this is right. In the same way that God created the world and then stepped back to go, this is very good. A family that functions on these principles, those are the families that people will look at and go, huh, that's the kind of family I want to have one day, right? Because it is intrinsically right. All right, we're going to break in a minute or two, but any questions at this stage, any pressing questions? Like I said, there is a Q&A coming up. But anyone who wants to ask anything right now? No? Okay. Give me 1 second. I just want to note something down here. Oh, come on.
Yo. So, these commands are, what you said about they need to obey because you said so.
Yeah. Yeah.
Do you start like training their heart with, you know, smaller quips of wisdom on why to have happy hearts?
Yeah. Yeah. No, that's a good question. I'm glad you're asking it because it means that the notes that I prepared are scratching where it itches. So we will get into that. But to answer you directly now, it's never too early to start with that. And I'm going to make that point when we get into the infancy age, that we can start saying things to our infant children like, you need to obey with a happy heart. Now, admittedly, your three-month-old has got no concept of what that is, what that means. But how do you instill that by saying that to them? It's the same way kids pick up language, right? How do your kids learn to speak with you, learn to converse with you? It's not because they have a dictionary built into their brains. It's by our constant conversation with them, they actually absorb vocabulary and they learn grammatical structure in order to intelligently converse. And we do that with language. But then why don't we do that with biblical principles? Because if we say to our three-month-old, you should obey with a happy heart, and we keep saying that, then perhaps by the time they're a three-year-old, they've got a well-developed concept of what that means. Whereas if you only start when they're three, they're like, I don't know what that means, right? And so it's never too early. It's going to look different and it's going to bear different fruit, but it's never too early. Okay? So even, I'd even be as bold as to say, call me crazy, but say it to the baby when it's in the womb. So, you know, when moms are pregnant and they love to talk to their babies, and it's such an unfair advantage because you get to spend time with the baby and the dads don't. And no, I mean it. Like, it's a privilege. You get 9 months head start on building a relationship with your kid. And I mean that in every way that honors and reveres the privilege that God gives to mothers. It's not fair. But as you're doing that, talk to your baby and talk about biblical concepts to your baby. You know, don't just tell that little boy that's kicking your ribs in that you hope one day they'll be a good soccer player. Tell them, I hope that one day you are going to grow up to fear the Lord. Call me weird, call me crazy, but make that part of what you do, and it's just going to feel so much more natural when the baby is with you out of the womb, okay? One exhortation that I really want to make, and we'll probably come back to it with the Q&A. If you have your Bibles, turn to Proverbs 14, verse 4. This is a principle that I don't think we talk about enough when it comes to parenting. And it's one of my favorite proverbs. I'll give it to you in a couple of different translations. Proverbs 14, verse 4 says, "Where no oxen are, the manger is clean, but much revenue comes by the strength of the ox." So that's the Legacy Standard Bible being very aptly formal in how they translate that. The New English Translation says, "Where there are no oxen, the feeding trough is clean, but an abundant harvest is produced by strong oxen." The NIV, "Where there are no oxen, the manger is empty, but from the strength of the ox comes abundant harvest." Or from the New Living Translation, "Without oxen, a stable stays clean, but you need a strong ox for a large harvest." Here's the principle. We will never accomplish anything meaningful or substantial without a little bit of mess. Okay? We will never accomplish anything meaningful or substantial without a little bit of mess. And so here's how I often think about this principle. I'm sure it's going to come up later on. Why don't we have our kids in Sunday school during the service or in a creche? Because they're noisy, they're distracting. Because we want to raise godly boys and girls. We want to accomplish something meaningful and substantial. So we're willing to take a little bit of mess. The manger is dirty. And yes, it means exactly what you think it means. The ox poops in the stall where he stays. The mess that we have to accept if we want to raise godly children is perhaps there's a little bit of noise. And so like now, you got kids here. We could go, oh, guys, this is interrupting the perfect calm, serene quiet that we hope to instill wisdom in you guys, used to instill wisdom in you guys. But we're not accomplishing anything meaningful, substantial that way. We want to train parents. Parents have kids. Kids make noise. They don't behave perfectly. So therefore, if you want a parenting course, you need to accommodate kids and need to be okay when kids need to be held, right? It's the same when you take it into your home. I remember the blissful days of 8 uninterrupted hours of sleep. But you don't raise kids that way. And so if you want to raise children, if you want to have kids, and they are one of life's richest blessings, then there's a little bit of mess that you need to accept. Because that's what it means to have an ox that produces a large harvest. But he also messes up his stable a little bit at the same time. Right? Some of you wives are going like, yeah, that's why I married my husband. Accepted a little bit of mess because it was the price I had to pay. Right? But the principle is encouraging for us, especially as parents, and as many applications that I'm sure we will talk about again during our Q&A time. So it is 7 past 10. We will break for, let's do 20 or 30 minutes. We'll see how it goes. There is coffee in the green flask. We'll flip the switch on the kettle. That'll boil again. So there's hot water for tea. And there's milk, sugar, everything else that you need. There are snacks on the table. Please make yourselves at home. Get yourself something to drink, something to eat, and check on your kids. Do what you've got to do. I'll call us back for the next session. Okay?